The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 30th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, Congress will consider granting Vietnam permanent normal trading status. Tyson Foods says the price of meat is going to go up because of higher feed costs. And a call has been made to examine technology and how it's deployed in FSA offices. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. Oh, and don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we're always joined by a meteorologist to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Today, our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser, will be on board to discuss the winter storm that's arriving in the Midwest.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat, a 502 settlement price, 11.5 cents higher. The March contract at 521.5. They were a dime higher for the day. December corn futures at 377, a penny off their new contract high. Settlement price up 6.75 for the day. March futures at 390.5. They were up 5.25. And the corn futures at 393.75, up 3.75. July futures 398. They were up 4.75 for the day in the corn pit. Soybeans, January contract 685.5, up 3.25. The March at $7.25, up 4.25. And the May futures at 707.75, up 3.75. Next year's Noves at 731 were up 3.5 cents this afternoon. December futures in the bean meal pit at 193.40, down 20 cents. December bean oil at 29.18, up 20 for the day. Over at the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished the January contract at $97.87.5. They were down 7.5. December live cattle at 85.70, 50 cents higher. The Feb's up 70 at 89.10. December lean hogs at 61.67.5. They were 42.5 higher for the afternoon. January crude oil futures, $63 even, up 54 cents for the day. And the dollar now trading at 82.96 is off 0.52. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,249, up just about 23 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does each and every Thursday afternoon, is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Let's talk about this new contract high in the corn pit, December, going all the way up to $3.78. Good sign for the near term?
Well, anytime you make higher highs, I guess you have to say that's friendly. But that just basically occurred in the front two contracts. Both the December and the March did make contract highs, but I think the May on back failed to do so. So that's something to kind of be watchful for. I think the front end market continues to get strength from a general lack of front-end movement. There's not much cash movement going. The market needs to pull inventories into the pipeline to kind of meet weekly consumption needs. And then we're also in the delivery process here of December corn. So it's something to kind of watch here for a couple days. A lot of volatility in the market during the last 5 to 10 minutes. Seems like all the action is in the first 5 to 10 and then the last 5 to 10. And we had some pretty good minus signs there for a minute, and then it came back and closed higher. So we are, you know, kind of in a, the volatility seems to be increasing a little bit, but nothing to be too concerned about, I don't think, Tom.
You mentioned that we're trading at an inverse, that being the nearbys are higher priced than the deferred, which is an unusual case. And they slipped just a bit today. The nearby December contract up 6.75, but the deferred settled at 3.62, and it was just up a penny and a quarter. Settlement price for the December nearby, by the way, at $3.77. How much concern should there be about next year's crop?
Well, it's a hard one to judge because, you know, a lot of it depends upon what the spring weather pattern is. If, you know, and it's real hard to play an extreme pattern for a three-week time window, and basically, you know, in order to get new crop corn to go sharply higher, you could probably say that, you know, between mid-April and mid-May, if you're rain every day and you start delaying plantings, then that December corn probably has a lot more push to the upside. But if you, you know, kind of assume a kind of a normal type spring, and I think for the most part you have to accept that or at least put that in your projections, that new crop corn back there doesn't look to be too bad a sale for a starting point. And that's all I'm basically going to say, I think, a starting point. I don't think it's one to get aggressive at, but it's a starting point for especially people that maybe don't have storage or whatnot, because I'm convinced, at least personally, now there's a lot of water that can go under the bridge between now and May or between now and June 1, but I do believe the acres have been bought. I think farmers intend to plant 6 to 7 million more acres of corn, but they're not planted yet, and they won't get planted for 6 months. So, you know, we're in a window here that just about anything can be spun, whichever way you want it, and the market can continue to worry about that. I think, you know, the January crop report that gives us December 1st stocks numbers and finalizes the production number, that I think is probably going to be a key report. And then that will, at least we'll have a point that we can kind of judge to measure the March number against. But the trend is your friend, and the market is up. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at. But the volatility here, and as I've mentioned for the last couple of weeks, is that, you know, this is a first week of, this is 5 weeks up out of that late October low. And I think the market now becomes vulnerable to downside price risk. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to, but I think we're vulnerable over the next, at least sometime here during December for a break to the downside.
Let's deal, I'll come back to that in just a moment, but I do want to deal a bit with the deferred contracts for next year. If you're right, and there's between 6 and 7 million acres that are already purchased, and we push through on a normal crop year, what do you foresee in terms of carryover for 2007, 2008, and potential prices at that point?
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. I know that's a lot.
That's a lot. You know, those are the questions you need to ask those PhDs over there in College of Agriculture, Todd.
We'll ask them, too.
Well, I guess I'm for one that thinks that, you know, a lot of that all depends upon how bullish you want to be on this energy front.
And how many actually get built?
Right. Okay. And whether or not crude oil is going to go to $100 or if it's going to stay at 60 or rally to 80. And, I mean, that's all up for discussion. But I guess I'm one that thinks we're going to go into a recession next year. So I think the demand for energy may not be quite as strong as what everybody thinks. The higher prices here over the past year and some has and is bringing new energy sources online. I'm a little concerned of getting too wildly bullish on ethanol production. So, there's no doubt that we're on a growth curve, a very steep growth curve, but there's a point here where it may not want to grow as much as what everybody's projecting down the road. So, you know, I'm sure the plants that have that we have broken ground on, they're probably going to go ahead and get planted, but I suspect that some of these plants that maybe are still in the works that need financing, there may be some cooling off in that, at least for the time being. And, you know, that's just something to kind of watch, I think, Todd.
Well, do you suppose that the additional demand that's built in already by the plants that are operating and those that have broken ground is enough to hold corn prices in that 250 and above range?
I don't know if I quite want to step out on the limb and say that we're at a new price plateau.
Yeah, the last time we did that, it didn't happen, did it?
We have a fit, you know. Let me put it this way. I've been watching markets and watching farmers make production decisions for over 30-some years since I got out of college, and they have never failed to overproduce a crop once they've got the incentive to do so. And they have definitely got the incentive to produce big crops of corn and soybeans. So, you know, the only thing that's going to get in their way is going to be Mother Nature. So I do think that we will have plenty of corn and soybeans come at us down the road with this type of incentive. So, you know, one has to be a little worried. The other thing is that the oil-producing countries, they can make money pumping oil at $60. They can make money pumping oil at $50. They can make money pumping oil at $40. And I imagine they can make money pumping it at $30. So I don't see any cutback in oil production. Now, Saudi Arabia may try to tuck in, but all these other smaller countries that rely on their wealth from oil, I don't see any incentive in them to slow down that well. I mean, I don't see Iran wanting to cut back on money. They need more money if they're going to build all those nuclear bombs that they keep talking about. That cat down there in Venezuela that keeps throwing darts up here, he needs his money. He ain't going to stop producing oil. So I think the price of energy, while it may not get real cheap, but I think there's been a lot of expansion in energy that maybe this energy thing has kind of slowed down. And I think that, you know, if you look at car sales, about the only people that are selling cars are the Japanese. And the Japanese are the people that's headed in the more of the hybrid. I mean, they're working the hybrid engines to get high gas mileage. So, you know, you have to kind of, you know, I don't want to be a pessimist or anything. I'm real optimistic. I think agriculture's got a bright future. But we always worry about overdoing something, and I suspect everybody's kind of worried about that at some point in time anyway.
One other question, and I've only got about 10 seconds for an answer. In 30 years, you said that when they've had the incentive to produce, they've always produced and overproduced. Have they ever contracted and recognize that overproduction, or once they start, do they just keep doing it?
Well, that's what got us back into the, you know, when they did that, of course, we don't have the set-asides anymore, but that's what happened. Then the government would always have to come back with a set-aside program to bring supply-demand back into balance. Now we've tried to go with the marketing loans for safety nets. But, you know, if we get ourselves in a situation where we overproduce and, you know, and that's kind of what we're in the process of doing is starting to write new farm bills and what kind of safety net, how to design a safety net for us. And then we're going into an environment that seems like everybody wants to cut government spending and all this. You got to be a little careful. That's all I say.
All right, Dan, we appreciate you being with us. It's always fun talking to you. Dan Zwicker is with AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at the radio station. Mike Sola from WILL says a winter storm warning is in effect for all of central Illinois and much of northern Illinois at this point. A winter weather advisory in effect for extreme northwestern Illinois and portions of southwestern Illinois as well. A winter storm watch is in effect for portions of southern Illinois today. And a high wind watch is in effect in eastern Indiana tonight, Mike says. In northern sections in western Illinois, snow, that'll be mixed at times with some sleet. In east central and southwestern Illinois, rain, sleet, freezing rain this evening, changing to snow overnight. In southeastern Illinois and central and southern Indiana, showers this evening, then a chance for a mix of rain and sleet overnight. Lows will range from 18 in northwestern Illinois to 40 in southeastern Indiana tomorrow. Mike says in eastern Indiana, mixed snow and sleet. Elsewhere, snow diminishing from west to east through the day. Highs tomorrow will range from 30 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in the southeastern part of Indiana.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Closing Market Report on WILL. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Congress will likely consider next week during the lame duck session whether to grant Vietnam permanent normal trade relations status now that the communist nation is joining the World Trade Organization. Infighting among congressional Republicans before President Bush's November visit to Vietnam prevented a vote on PNTR status. Tyson Foods is forecasting higher prices for beef, chicken, and pork as grain costs climb. Company executives at an investor conference in New York say expect production reductions to get an immediate increase in price to offset feed costs. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says USDA's Farm Service Agency needs to examine its employees and technology issues on an office-by-office basis. The FSA made over $200 million in subsidy payments in fiscal year 2006 to producers who did not qualify. Grassley says if there are not enough personnel to do the job properly, a few million dollars in additional personnel costs would ultimately save tax dollars. Grassley, a Republican, says he wants to remain on the Senate and Judiciary Committees, meaning unless he's appointed, he's off the Senate Agriculture Committee.
The reason I don't know right now is they go through rounds. They go through all the Republican members and you take your first select. Well, I'm going to stay on finance. Then you go through the second one, and I'm going to stay on judiciary. Then the third one is actually appointed by the Republican leader, not selected based on seniority. So I put into the leader my desire to serve on that committee. But the reason that it's in doubt is because you're only assured of two A committees, and agriculture also happens to be an A committee.
Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. The newly published National Animal Identification System User Guide says the program is voluntary and not a stepping stone to a mandatory ID system. The guide says producers have the right to opt out. The Livestock Marketing Association is surveying its membership on the costs of voluntary participation. John McBride is director of information for the LMA. McBride says little is known of voluntary costs of animal ID.
The problem is that we have not, for the last 3 years or so, we at LMA have not been able to get any answers from USDA or anybody else on what the heck this might cost America's livestock markets and their producer customers. We've been asking, we haven't been getting anything, so basically we decided to team up with Kansas State University and do a very comprehensive survey of our members, markets around the U.S., to find out what this might cost them.
McBride says despite USDA's pledge to keep the system voluntary, it continues to call for 40% of young animals and 70% of all animals to be registered by 2008. A delegation of U.S. lawmakers met yesterday with WTO Director General Pascal Lamy in Geneva. The discussion centered on world trade talks. Wisconsin Democrat Ron Kind was at the meeting. Kind says if substantial progress in world ag trade negotiations can occur over the next few months, Congress might be willing to consider extension of presidential fast-track trade authority. Arby's Restaurant Group says it will no longer serve French fries with trans fat, and it will reduce trans fat in other food items. CEO Roland Smith says that by next May, 75% of Arby's menu items will contain less than half a gram of trans fat. And the Food and Drug Administration is expected to release a draft of new regulations that could allow for the sale of meat and milk from cloned animals. The FDA expects to release the draft by the year's end. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website and sign up for our weekend newsletter. It's up on the top of the page. Just hit subscribe at willag.org. Well, normally at this time on a Thursday afternoon, we'd take a look at a commentary from the Farm Bureau. I told you that was going to come up, but I was having so much fun with Dan Zwicker this afternoon, we ran a little long with him. So we'll get some extra time with Dan and with this next gentleman, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at the cash grain market. Hi, Bill. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Let's talk. We didn't talk at all about soybeans with Dan, so maybe we better go back and catch that from the futures perspective. What's been happening this week?
Well, we've been kind of back and forth up for the week. I mean, it's really pretty simple on the beans. I think that the job of the market is to, the worry of the market in soybeans is that we're not getting high enough to maintain acres. Some of these acres back out of the corn. And especially right now, I think we still have some time to get some acres down in South America. And if we can get up here high enough, we'll probably see some acres planted down there that we may not have had we been, you know, lower like we were earlier in the fall.
Well, is $7 high enough?
Well, I think we're getting there. The problem we've got probably, if you look at the other side, is that, you know, Brazil is about 65%, I believe, right now planted. So we're pretty far into the process, just like here. You know, once you kind of make the decision and start going, it's not as easy to change, but I don't know. I don't know if $7 is high enough or not. If corn continues to go higher, probably not.
It's an interesting dynamic because, of course, they have a different set of crops, and they wouldn't be able to plant corn, so they're not competing on that one. So it'll be fun to watch that as it plays out. Tell me about the cash grain situation and how it's been holding up for basis as this move higher happened today.
Well, kind of interesting on the soybeans. We're seeing the basis overall, corn and beans, a little bit weaker, just feels weaker, especially today. I think part of what we're seeing on the soybeans is this big move that we have had up is maybe seeing some margin money requirements. And I think you're actually seeing some beans move just because of that. You did see some of the processors come into the market here earlier in the week, pop up there pretty good on bases and evidently got bought what they needed bought, so they've kind of backed off here again. The corn continues to be steady, but good weather, farmers wanting to bring some December and January contracts into the elevator, that's continuing to keep the corn moving and has caused us to back off just a little bit here this week.
Now, what are the bids in Lexington, Illinois today?
On the corn, we've got 267, soybeans, 657.
All right. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks.
Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Thursday afternoon. In just about 2 minutes, we'll talk with Chief Meteorologist at the radio station, WILL's own Ed Keezer. Up next, your regional newscast. This is the Closing Mark Report. I'm Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A handful of school districts have decided to send students home early today as the threat of winter weather becomes a reality. Most affected districts are west of Champaign County, where freezing rain has developed. Forecasters are calling for up to a foot of snow in parts of northern and northwest Illinois, along with sleet and freezing rain. Illinois lawmakers have approved a $1 increase in the state's minimum wage. The legislation now goes to the governor's office. Governor Blagojevich supports the increase. The measure would bump the minimum wage to $7.50 an hour starting in July of next year. That would be followed by increases every summer until the minimum wage reaches $8.25 in 2010. The increase was approved on a 40-17 vote in the state Senate. It passed the House yesterday. Supporters say it'll help hundreds of thousands of low-wage workers and their children. Opponents say it will force businesses to raise prices and cut jobs. The Senate has also approved a plan to ease the pain of higher electric rates that will take effect in January, but a stalemate between the state Senate and House means nothing to help consumers will pass in this legislature's fall session. A 10-year freeze on electric rates expires in January. Prices are expected to soar by 22% to more than 50%. The Senate plan would phase in those higher rates over 3 years. It passed on a 40-16 vote. But House Speaker Michael Madigan opposes the phase-in. He wants to freeze electric rates at their current level. The legislative session ends today, but lawmakers might still be able to take action when they come back to the State House in January. Maurice Legrone Jr.'s relatives say he and Amanda Hamm made school and other plans for Hamm's three children months before they drowned in Clinton Lake. A string of Legrone's relatives testified yesterday at Hamm's murder trial that the couple explored child care, housing, and college possibilities about 2 months before the children died. An aging population is shedding new light on a medical specialization that experts say has long been neglected. Urbana's Carle Foundation Hospital will fund a new fellowship program for doctors studying geriatric care. The program will let physicians explore physical therapy, social service, nutrition, and other issues. The geriatrician in charge of the program says the field has often been plagued by high job stress and low financial reimbursement. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is the closing market report on WILL. We're joined now to take a look at the weather forecast, probably mostly here in the Midwest, by Chief Meteorologist at the radio station, Ed Kieser. Good afternoon to you, Ed.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, you've been on the phone, I believe, with the folks at the National Weather Service and discussing the big winter storm that's making its way across the Midwest. What's the latest news?
Well, the latest news is, since I've talked to them, we've revised things a little bit yet again, as we have a big storm system evolving well to our southwest. It's going to come northeast tonight, and that its track and intensity will be the determining factor on who gets what, and slight changes in both can make a big difference from one county to the next. And basically, we think that overnight tonight into tomorrow morning, there will be a swath of heavy snow. And we're talking, in some cases, maybe over a foot of snow. And at this point, it looks like the I-55 corridor is the place that will get the most snow. So if you're tuning in from out towards Springfield to Bloomington Normal up through Pontiac, be at least ready for that. As you get farther to the southeast of there, the snowfall amounts will be a lot less because there's going to be sleet, freezing rain, and rain mixed in. Now, here in Champaign-Urbana, we're down to 30.5 degrees. It is starting to ice up on tree limbs and power lines, and unfortunately, this may continue for a while here this afternoon and evening. Bridges and overpasses will start to get slippery on the interstate, so just keep in mind we have that already, and there is a winter storm warning in effect. Freezing rain is now falling in Champaign-Urbana, Decatur, and Springfield. The precipitation has tapered off to nothing for right now in Bloomington Normal and Peoria, but from Champaign to Downs, there's going to be freezing rain. The road surface is not bad yet, but the bridges will freeze first, especially as the sun gets lower.
Is this one of those storms that comes in and goes out quickly, or will we see several waves of it over a 24-hour period?
We're going to have a couple of waves. We have the one area of precipitation over us now, and then we're going to have another batch coming in overnight tonight. I'd say after 9 p.m. some of the precipitation will really pick up in intensity and will last into the early morning tomorrow, and then tomorrow afternoon it just tapers off to flurries and ends, and we'll get on out of here. But I think travel is going to be dangerous tonight into tomorrow morning across much of Illinois and parts of northern and west central Indiana. The farther east you go, the warmer it is, and the more it'll be just rain.
And then after we get out of here, if we've got a bunch of snow on the ground, we also have high winds coming in too?
Well, that's the biggest problem that I think that we're going to contend with tomorrow, is the places that get snow are then going to have to deal with the winds. As this low intensifies, we're going to have strong winds out of the northeast to north tomorrow. And as you know, and our listeners in the farming community know, even with 1 inch of snow, if you get really strong winds, that could cause whiteout conditions. So I think tomorrow, especially through the middle of the day, travel is going to be bad. And especially, I think, along that I-55 corridor. And when I say corridor, obviously it's not just going to go right up I-55, but you know, tens of miles east and west of I-55, there's going to be a lot of snow, and some of that will be blowing around with the strong winds tomorrow. So tomorrow's not going to be a good day for travel.
Ed, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure.
Ed Kieser is AM580 Chief Meteorologist, joining us this afternoon, filling in for our regular agricultural meteorologist because of the special circumstances that are happening here in the Midwest. Peter Levitt also not available this afternoon. But Ed, filling in with some really important information about the kinds of weather that you can expect over the next 24 hours if you're in the rural areas. Be very careful, especially with that blowing snow, and get yourself prepared to stay inside for, well, maybe at least a 24-hour period, if not longer. You have a great afternoon and stay very safe. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been the Closing Market Report.